Faster Mai, hello and welcome to this episode of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. A month on since the first case of COVID-19 on the island, regular fixtures of Manx life are slowly finding ways to keep going, including the planning committee, which is now meeting digitally but not in public. With a build-up of home recycling, there's a call to reopen some waste facilities, Braddon commissioners face a question over a multi-million pound community centre plan, and Douglas Council says it's taking steps to help people keep paying rent. The island's planning committee has found a way to keep meeting throughout the pandemic, but not in public. Temporary measures have been brought in to allow the body, which is made up of a number of lay people, to continue making decisions using technology. Chairman Tim Baker says controversial applications will be deferred until they can be dealt with in the normal manner, though. As meetings aren't going to be held in public anymore, applicants, objectors and local authorities will no longer be able to speak or ask questions, but committee agendas will be published 10 days in advance of meetings to allow additional written comments to be made. Well, I spoke to Mr. Baker and asked him whether holding meetings away from the public eye in this time was the right solution.
The bottom line is that we've not been able to hold planning committee meetings since the coronavirus issue emerged, and it was felt that continuing not to hold planning committee meetings was the worst possible outcome, because it obviously is just backlogging the system and stopping things moving forward. So we had to look for a way to make the planning process work. And of course, the important thing is that planning committee is just one piece of the overall process. The whole of the process end to end is public, and all the documentation is public.
But that key decision-making part for the controversial applications or the applications where there's been a certain number of comments or objections, that's not going to be accessible. People aren't going to be able to be part of that decision-making process anymore. I mean, is that right?
They are going to be part of the decision-making process, but they're not going to be able to physically attend the actual hearing, because we're not able to hold a public hearing.
But could they not be able to hear the sort of deliberations of the committee through something? They've done it with virtual Timwald. Was there not an option to do that with the planning committee?
The circumstances for the planning committee are slightly different from Timwald, and I think we've ended up with a pragmatic response here. One of the key points I would draw out, Ewan, is that under the new emergency powers, the committee has got the ability to defer applications if it feels that that's in the public interest to do so. So anything that's particularly controversial, we're highly likely to defer. The vast majority of applications, even the ones that come to planning committee, there's only around between a third and a half of them that actually have speakers. And the ones that don't, effectively, are in private. People could attend, but they don't. So there's only a very small number of applications that are actually witnessed by the public.
But there's a difference between being the numbers that do attend planning committees and the principle of being able to attend them. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt. In an ideal world, we would be continuing to do what we were doing, which was public meetings every alternate Monday in Murray House. That wasn't possible. We have to get the planning process back into full working order, because as we come out of this coronavirus crisis, we're going to need to get the economy working again and developments going again. The exam question was to find a way to make it happen. Now, you referenced virtual Timwald before. You've got 33 members of Timwald who have got government technology. They've got the support of GTS. The members of planning committee, other than myself, are all lay people. Some of them are over the age where they need to be socially isolating. Everybody is in their own circumstances. The practicalities of going for a very technical solution were prone with risk to try and put facilities into people's individual homes, wherever they may be, and for it to work. And you've got a very diverse group of people with different levels of IT competence and facilities. So what we've ended up with is a pragmatic solution. The output in terms of the minutes of the meeting and of course all the submissions are all public documents. The other point is, of course, that the appeal process will still be there for those who are not satisfied with the decisions of the committee. Mm. So I think the risk is limited. Clearly, officers and myself would prefer to be doing this in public. One of the things I think we have achieved in the last 3.5 years is a big improvement in the reputation of the planning process, and part of that is its transparency. And those who've attended planning committee meetings have generally been very, very positive about the way it's been done, and been quite surprised, I think, actually, how open and transparent it was. So it is regrettable.
Do you not run the risk of sort of damaging that reputation, though, with any decisions that may be challenged that were made during these private meetings?
I think we have to be very mindful of the applications that we do consider in this period. And certainly as chair, I'm going to be looking to make sure that anything that's particularly controversial is deferred, because it would be wrong to undermine the good work that has been done.
Well, do you think you can do that indefinitely? Because obviously we don't have a time limit on current circumstances. Will there not come a time when you can't keep deferring controversial applications and the committee may need to consider a different way of working?
Yeah, absolutely. We're looking at this as a way of getting the process restarted, and we will be reviewing after each planning committee hearing to see, can we improve things? Can we make further changes? And there's an absolute commitment to want to do this in as transparent a way as possible. And I recognise that the more public we can make it, the better. Equally, you know, there's so many pressures on the public service at the moment that to go for a perfect solution is impractical. You know, some Timor members have questioned, could we get a better solution? And yes, in isolation we could, but you're diverting resources that are dealing with, you know, such a range of very important issues at the moment. And there are inevitable consequences of prioritising one thing over another. So I think we've got an acceptable way of working here. We're very mindful of the risks that are involved, but actually doing nothing, which is where we were until these regulations were passed, was the worst possible scenario. The other point I would make, Ewan, is that 85% of planning applications are dealt with under delegated powers by officers, and those are not in public. It's only the 15% that come to planning committee. And of those, many of those are very straightforward and they come more for technical reasons. So we're talking about a handful probably over the period that we're looking at here that are likely to be controversial. The appeal process will still be there for anybody who's aggrieved, and I'd expect that to be used. But I would expect us to defer applications that are particularly contentious.
The chairman of the island's planning committee, Tim Baker. The head of Maloo Commissioners has called for the safe reintroduction of some recycling facilities to allow citizens to dispose of waste gathered during the pandemic. All amenity sites closed last month, which along with the cancellation of curbside collections has resulted in a big increase in the volumes of domestic rubbish being collected. Maloo Commissioners reported a 30% increase in the weight of domestic waste collected in the last 2 weeks. The parish has also fallen victim to fly tipping in recent weeks. The local authority chairman is Nigel Baisley.
Basically, two articles, rather large cardboard boxes, I'm led to understand, have been deposited around the recycling centre, which is at the back of the abbey. One was from Port Erin and one was from Castletown. I mean, fly tipping in its own right is obviously illegal and not a good thing to do, but it's particularly bad in so much that one of these has obviously travelled all the way from Port Erin and the other one has come from Castletown. Both have their own refuge facilities and collections, etc. You know, they're obviously at this time not necessary journeys.
Well, where are people supposed to put their recycling at the moment? Mr. Baisley.
This is something that we have been tackling with the DOI. We realise that ministers and the DOI and everybody else has rather bigger issues at the moment, but we feel personally that while we understand that the tips, etc., are shut for a very good reason. We feel that the recycling centres locally should be opened.
Could that be done safely, though?
The recycling centres locally can be emptied by a single man operated refuge wagon. So from that point of view, there's no double crews or etc. that need to be done. The downside to that is that obviously we have to trust people to exercise the 2 metre separation and use the recycling centres sensibly, not the large cardboard boxes, etc. And we would prefer the local recycling centres to be open on the premise that that would then mean that people could walk on their exercise thing to deposit the recycling materials, and that would not include a vast increase in journeys by car. We feel that this should be done right across the island. I do understand, I am a householder myself. I mean, to give you an example, I've got 2 large boxes, 3 deck chairs that need to go to the tip, and a metal stand, because people are at home and they're having clear outs. Mental health is a big pitch, so people doing things is important. But not everybody has got large gardens or even a garden space to store things. If you're living in a flat, even if we get back to the basics of plastic bottles and cans, etc., if you're living in a flat, you've got nowhere to store them.
Could the local authority store things on behalf of residents temporarily?
We don't have a place where we can store things temporarily. And it's the logistics of doing that. I mean, in our particular case, what we were proposing was that the local recycling centres were allowed to actually do the cans. I mean, plastic bottles can go in the bin, the green bin, and it can be burned. Basically, stuff that can't be burned can't go in the bin. And this is the big issue, because it causes problems down at the Energy for Waste centre. But there's a whole load of other questions as to the people who process the glass and the people who process the tins. Well, I've spoken to Barry this morning, and it was discussed back in January about an area that the DOI was thinking of way before COVID came out, about an area being available to store rubbish somewhere, because if the Energy from Waste plant ever broke down, there might be a 2 or 3 week backlog if it broke down on a major scale. So that, but we do need to get this moving, because obviously the lockdown has been increased in time, and something needs to shift, and the government needs to start thinking about. We're getting into warmer times, yeah. The summer's out. Even with the best will in the world, if you wash your cans out and the bottles, the vermin around here are going to sniff it, and they're going to start using it. And then, of course, when they start producing young, the whole thing, we know where this is going, and that could create health issues.
Well, do you know when the amenity sites are likely to reopen? Have you been told by the government?
No, we've not been told when they're going to reopen. I mean, to be honest, Ewan, if you think about it, it would have to be phased. And if it was suddenly just open like that, there'd be traffic jam. I mean, you take the one down at Port Erin, I can quite well imagine there'd probably be a traffic jam down the coast road all the way through Guernsey down to Blinking Castlefell, or maybe beyond. People trying, and the wagons wouldn't be able to come in, unload it, and get it off. It would have to be phased. I mean, we have discussed last couple of days with various commissioners about the possibility of us getting or either contracting a low loader or using one of our own to go up and down the streets to collect refuse that would normally go to the tip, and then doing that as ourselves, so it's only one lorry travelling and going there and depositing it, and then, you know, so that until we go over the initial peak, I mean, it's one of the things we're discussing. We're discussing lots of things about what will happen when we do come back online, you know, and it is going to have to be a phased approach. But we do want to keep traffic down to a minimum. We want to keep the risk down to a minimum. And it could be that we would provide a wagon coming up and down, and people would just literally put the larger items that would normally go to the recycling centre into the back of the wagon, and when we would deal with it from there.
The chair of Maloo Commissioners there, Nigel Baisley. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Braddon commissioners are facing the prospect of paying millions of pounds more than first estimated to build a community centre adjacent to Nobles Hospital. 3 bids of around £7 million have been submitted by contractors willing to construct the complex, which includes a new local authority office and a multi-purpose hall for sports and public events. The tender result comes despite efforts by the commissioners to reduce the cost of the Strang Cornerfield project, which was initially thought to be around £4 million. Authority Chairman Andrew Jessop explained the costs to me.
The development is a proposed new office headquarters complex for Braddon commissioners and some community facilities in a way of childcare, potentially pharmacy, opticians, that type of thing, children's soft play area. And then the main development would be a multi-purpose hall, which could be used for a variety of sporting and other public events, theatrical events, film viewings, public meetings, you name it, and then an outside area as well that could be used for a variety of purposes. So, yeah, it's quite a large development.
And
it's adjacent to the hospital.
Adjacent to the hospital. And why is it needed, Andrew?
Well, it's something that we've been looking at for the 20 years nearly that I've been a commissioner. It was land that we bought off the DHSS with the purpose, you know, of providing community facilities. It's something that there's a shortage of in the island, particularly there's demand from sports clubs to have covered facilities. There's a shortage of places to have large numbers of people meeting, which obviously at the moment is a bit ironic because everybody's been told to keep apart. And it was an opportunity for commissioners to provide, you know, more modern up-to-date facilities for themselves, and at the same time provide some facilities for businesses that, you know, with the growth of the number of properties in that area, to serve those people.
Mm. Now, it's an expensive scheme, or maybe it isn't. Can you just tell us the costs involved?
Well, we had, you know, because this has been quite a slow burn project, the prices over the last few years or estimates for the project have sort of escalated from around about $4.5 million, anything up to about $8 million.
Double?
Yes, obviously we did actually go back to the drawing board and actually remove a few things. We even shortened the building by a few metres as well to reduce costs. But we had the tender opening at midday today, and we've had three prices came back, which is probably a reflection of the current situation in the island and in the construction industry, and they have all come in around about the $7 million mark.
What happens next in the process? You've had that tenders in.
The board will consider the tendered prices. And we will have a discussion amongst ourselves as to where we take the project from there. You know, it hasn't come back as a big surprise. It's obviously a little bit more than we would have liked, but because this potentially provides more than just a local facility, but a facility that will serve the wider island community, and obviously being right on the doorstep of Nobles Hospital, which is one of the biggest employers on the island, it potentially offers you know, a lot of benefits to people working in the hospital, and also potentially could help attract staff to come and live and work at the hospital, which is something obviously the islanders at times struggle to do.
Mm-hmm. Would you be willing to wait and perhaps re-tender later down the line when the situation has changed, what with the pandemic, but also with the fact the island's construction industry is involved in a lot of things at the moment, and perhaps there's less appetite to take on a project such as this at the moment?
It is a scenario that we have already considered. We did consider actually sort of but putting the tenders on hold for 6 months, but it was agreed that we'd actually, because people had already started putting the tenders together, that we would carry on with the process. So yes, it is something that will be in the melting pot when we discuss it with the project team and potentially with people from Treasury.
Could you do it with $7 million rather than the $8 million that you mentioned?
Well, as I say, I think if it had gone up anywhere near that $8 million, there would have been it's a non-starter.
Mm.
Even at $7 million, it's a lot of money. We had obviously been hoping that the project would wash its face in terms of the income that could be generated from those areas that are available for people to to hire or take a lease on, you know, things like cafes, as I say, the pharmacy, the play potential playgroup area, and obviously the lettings of the main hall. But, you know, obviously we look need to look at the sums. We didn't want it to be a burden on the ratepayer. Obviously, Braddon's rates are less than some of our neighbouring sort of larger urban areas, but we want to obviously keep our rates reasonably affordable for people and not overburden them with something that isn't just a local facility for local people.
The chairman of Braddon Commissioners, Andrew Jessop. And finally on agenda, the leader of Douglas Council's Housing Committee has outlined the steps the authority is taking to support tenants amid the public health crisis. Councillor Claire Wells says officers have called hundreds of people in council homes to explain how rent payments can be managed whilst household finances are under stress. She spoke to me.
The council is very aware that this is a very difficult time for a lot of people. We have households that probably haven't got the amount of income that they had before this all happened. We are trying to help people in relation to what we can do to ensure that when we get to the end of this, they're not hit with a big bill.
So what can you do? What kind of options are there?
So there's options like paying by direct debit, or if you need to pay less now, you can do that, bearing in mind that at the end, you'll have to pay the whole bill at the end. But reducing your payments now might help you get through this period so that you can then catch up later. But stopping paying altogether is what we're trying to avoid. And if you're in a position that you can't pay because your income has reduced so much, then we are advising you to get in touch with social services as soon as possible so that they can look at assisting you to pay your rent at the moment.
Well, considering that a lot of industries are under threat and some may not reopen for, it could even be a year, why does the council think people will be able to afford to pay later on?
It's not a case of knowing whether or not they'll be able to pay later on. It's about managing the whole system now to ensure that when we get to the end of this and things do return to somewhat normality, people aren't then shocked by massive bill coming in at the end. So we need to try and avoid that. We need to try as much as we can.
This could go on for an indeterminate length of time. So can't the council relax some of the rules and restrictions around rent payments?
So I think it's fair to say that we are relaxing some of the rules around the payments. So we're not looking at doing any evictions at the moment. We are really just trying to help people now, because it is likely that this is going to go on for a long period of time. But that doesn't mean that this bill goes away. It just means that you're kicking it down the road. And I know that it's really difficult for people. And I understand that a lot of people are in a difficult position, which is why we're saying, if you are struggling now, please, please phone us so that we can help you now. Don't bury your head in the sand and think that in 6 months' time it'll go away, because it will just come back on your doorstep and we'll have to deal with it at that point. And if you are struggling to pay because you haven't got the income you'd have, then please contact us and we will help you to contact social services and they can assist you so that in the long run you're not hit with a massive bill.
Do you think the council will be able to continue to fund housing to the same extent in the medium-term future? Because, I mean, a lot of people who use social housing are going to be in industries heavily affected by this pandemic, industries that might take a long time to rebuild to the level they were before. Are you worried about the long-term future funding of housing?
I am worried about the long-term funding for housing, but I think that's where we have to look to the government, because they are the ones that control what we spend, how we spend it, and the income that we get. So if there is a shortfall of any kind, we would need to be looking to them to assist us, whether it be with a short-term loan or however it is they decide we look at it. But we will catch up eventually. And as I'm sure you can understand, all the capital programs and stuff have now come to a stop. So the people that are in Willesden, all the stuff there is stopped. So there's no money going out from that point of view.
Well, are they ring-fenced, those projects? Are you set on delivering them, or is there a threat that they could stop because of this, because of the impact on council finances as well as government finances?
Yeah, so the capital projects, they are ring-fenced because they are loans as opposed to money that we have sitting in our coffers, if you want to put it that way. So we are definitely determined to get on with those projects. It's just that at the moment we can't because of the position that we're in. And as soon as we are in a position that the industry starts again and we're able to carry on, we will do that. It'll just be that everything is delayed because of the situation we're in at the moment.
Douglas Council's Housing Committee Chair, Claire Wells. Well, that's all from this programme. We'll be back with more from Agenda soon, and you can listen again to this episode online via the Manx Radio website as a podcast and through Spotify. But for now, Guru Mayu, goodbye and stay safe.